Welcome, everyone. We are live, coming to you from the end of WrestleMania weekend, because we recorded this a couple of days later. It is the Raging Robot Party Cast, coming to you with your host, Ryan, and your other host, Josh. We're going to tell you some things that happened this WrestleMania weekend in the world of professional wrestling in general, and other random garbage we're going to talk about, too. Okay, that's your cue.
All right. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, my name again is Ryan, my partner with me is Josh, and welcome to the Raging Robot Cast, partial WrestleMania review, partial celebration of wrestling, partial celebration of everything else. So, as Josh mentioned, this past weekend was WrestleMania weekend.
Was it ever?
Yeah, and so, you know, I got to have fun, I threw a party. I actually had quite a few people show up, which caught me off guard, considering that traditionally when I invite people, it's like two.
I was out of town.
Yes, unfortunately. But, just to get a preferent statement out there, yes, we know wrestling is fake before anyone says it.
What?
We've known wrestling is fake for years, people. Get
what
over it.
What have I been wasting my life on?
Get over it. It's full contact ballet. How awesome is that?
It's like a play, except it's violent, and it's great.
That it is. Alright, so, once again, Josh mentioned he was out of town, so he missed part of it, so I'm going to intro and start this. So, we'll really quickly go through the pre-show and mention a few things. Alright, so, pre-show, for those of you who are unaware, is just a bunch of talking, and they bring guests out and try and make people laugh, which never does. So, the first match we start off with of WrestleMania was the Cruiserweight Championship, 205 Live, one of the shows that WWE runs, and it is probably the least of all their shows, unfortunately. The Cruiserweights put on a good show, and I cannot quite remember it, who did it to who, but there was a standing Frankensteiner, and so for people who are unaware of the move, I believe it's an enziguri, which is you set your opponent up on top of the third ring post, jump on their shoulders, and fall backwards, and your opponent flings himself forward and falls flat on the back.
Actually, I got you. It is a Hurricane Rana.
Hurricane Rana, yes.
Scott Steiner innovated it by being huge and dropping people on their head with it.
Yeah. And so to do it from a standing version like he does, it is standing still, probably jumping 6 feet in the air onto the other person's shoulders, flinging your full force backwards in order to drive your other person's head in a full flip onto the ground, which looked really sick, really awesome, probably a dangerous as hell move that they got in trouble for, who knows.
Yeah, it's, maybe. Seems like they let some shows get away with things that other shows don't.
Yeah. Tony Nese wins the championship off of Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy had been holding it for a long time, but as I said, unfortunately, 205 being the lesser of the shows is not exactly the one that I pay attention to a lot.
I don't even know when it's on.
Yeah. It's on after SmackDown. I only know that because of Instagram. All right, we go to next, moving on, the Women's Battle Royal. It was named after someone.
Mae Young, originally.
Yeah. Fabulous Moolah.
Ah, yes.
They did have the Fabulous Moolah. For those of you who are unaware, there is a very, very dark and bad history with Fabulous Moolah. So, people pressured Snickers. Everyone, because Snickers is the sponsor of WrestleMania, to change the name. So now it's just the Women's Battle Royal. Carmella wins the thing in literally the exact same fashion that was won last year for two things, where she powdered out of the ring early on. Sarah Logan of the Riot Squad, which is the second thing, is kind of an issue, is WWE probably spent the last month and a half, jobbing out the Riot Squad to Becky and Ronda Rousey. And they're great, and don't get me wrong. That should not have happened, but that's what they did, and I guess to try and make up for it, they had the Riot Squad out there looking like they were the biggest killers in the world, but it's like, you can't just go from zero to hero. That never works. But anyway, Sarah Logan thought she won. Carmella comes back in and tosses her over the rope, which is literally the exact same way Naomi won last year.
Hmm. She should have won again this year.
Probably. But we move on to the first feel-good moment of the season, of the day. The Drog Tag Team Champions, The Revival versus Curt Hawkins. So,
WWE... By himself?
And Zack Ryder. Forgive me. It was a handicap, but no, it was not. Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder versus... Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder versus The Revival. The Revival is known as one of the best tag teams in WWE.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
But unfortunately, WWE does not concentrate on tag teams enough. The Revival was not very happy with where they were. They made themselves known. They were given the belts. But to say it, it's kind of a lackluster run, purely because The Revival kept winning every single time they defended, but they also kept winning by the skin of their teeth. And so they finally drop it to what is essentially a joke tag team, but because of that, that's what makes it so great. Curt Hawkins was on the biggest losing streak in WWE history. I think it was 425 by the time he walked through WrestleMania. Zack Ryder is literally known for forcing himself into winning a belt and then being punished by dropping it the very next night.
But he's great, though.
He is great. They're two cool dudes. They're toy collectors. I believe they have a podcast about it, don't they?
Yeah, it's great. I listen to it every... I think it drops Thursdays, but I listen to it on Friday.
What's it called?
The Major Wrestling Figure Podcast.
Yes. They're really cool. It is a fantastic. I popped hard meeting. I got really excited for this one.
I don't even collect wrestling figures, and I actually listen to it.
We move on to the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, which is the male version of the Battle Royal.
Andre wasn't in it.
No, unfortunately not. Braun won. He beat up Colin Jay, or...
Colin Jost?
Colin Jost in...
Oh, man. I'm trying to vamp. I don't remember his name. Same either.
Jay Farrow, I think.
Jay something.
The two people that do Saturday Night Live, the weekend updates. For whatever reason, WWE decided they were the celebrities this year.
Hold on, let me verify. You can keep on.
But anyways, I can move on to past that. It starts. We get the return of Luke Harper. That's about the only other
thing. Okay, it was Colin Jost and Michael Che.
Yeah. That's about the only other thing that happens in there. They automatically powder out. The match goes on. Looks like Braun has won. They come back. It looks like they're about to toss Braun over the rope with Luke Harper. Braun, being Braun, breaks out and wins the thing. We get another comedy bit with them later with, I believe it was Scott Hall and Razor Ramon that showed up dressed like doctors.
That's cool.
Yeah. Which was kind of just a weird intermission in the middle of it, which... For those of you who are unaware, WrestleMania was 7-plus hours this year.
Yeah, and the edited-down version on the network is still 5 hours long.
So, I said that.
I actually know why the shows are so long now.
Yeah.
The upper management and CEOs, that sort of thing, are actually paid bonuses by how long their shows are. So, I'm not sure how that math pans out. I'm basically summarizing something I read some time ago, which also could have been complete bullshit, but, yeah, apparently they do it based on how long they run big shows for, so that's why these shows are ungodly long.
Show opens, America the Beautiful, because Vince thinks the national anthem is boring.
It is.
It is, truth be told, and America the Beautiful is the better of the songs, but... This year, traditionally, it's a jet flyover. This year, we get a helicopter squad flyover, which was kind of weird.
That must have taken forever.
A little bit, yeah. And it's not the only use of helicopters in the show, but...
Yes. I was there for that.
Yes. We kick off officially with Alexa Bliss coming out, talking about making a WrestleMania moment, and she says, "I can do it right now," and snaps her fingers... And a giant hot dog comes out that is wrinkled, known as Hulk Hogan, and real American hits. And Hulk Hogan comes out, says like 10 words, poses to the crowd.
They were all brother.
Yeah. It got me to laugh, though, because Corey Graves did have one of the better calls, and I believe it was Renee Young. This one, what do you think of the pythons on Alexa Bliss? And to which Corey Graves replies, she's wearing long sleeves, Renee. Which was one of the better ones. And the second funny moment that's pointed out is we also get the start of our first match. Paul Heyman comes down, and while Paul Heyman is walking the ramp, Real American is still playing, as if Real American is Paul Heyman's song now, which I would love to see Paul Heyman walk down the ramp to Real American every single time.
You both have the same haircut.
Yeah, they both do. But he comes out and says, you know, if Brock Lesnar is not going to be on last, he's going to be on first, because he's got places to be and places to go. So we kick off with what, in all honesty, I expected to be the second to last match.
Yeah, you told me, like, the title had already changed hands when I was still not in San Antonio, and I was like, what?
Yeah. Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins. Brock Lesnar, MMA star, WWE star. Biggest issue with him is he doesn't show up ever.
Played football for a second.
Yeah, until he hurt the quarterback.
Yeah.
He never shows up to Raw, which he's supposed to, so he holds the biggest title and almost never defends it, and never is there to entertain people, and that's why people hate him so much. Seth Rollins, he was part of a group called The Shield, which was really popular. He turned heel, then half-face, then a full-face.
They can't decide.
Yeah, they can't really decide what they want with Seth.
He's full-face now.
Supposedly, but after Raw, it's kind of weird.
Who knows?
Yeah. But he comes out. Rollins comes out. He's not in cosplay this year, which is weird.
Oh, that is weird. I expected something.
So did I. Unless gold and black is some cosplay that I don't know. Hmm. It's definitely possible. He did an infinity gauntlet that was really weird because it just made one of his knees yellow and made it look like it was a glowing weak point on him.
Okay, that's a thing. We're pausing.
Alright, sorry.
We're back. Ryan didn't die.
Yep. So Seth comes out first, the reason being that Brock comes out and literally presses X to break out and starts beating up Seth. And this goes on for about 5-10 minutes, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I'd like to note there is a special technique you must employ to beat Brock Lesnar that the last couple of challengers did not do, and that's why they did not win.
Yes, and we're about to see it. So, Brock beats up Seth. Eventually, Seth crawls his way back into the ring. Brock steps in the ring to beat up Seth some more. They ring the bell. He beats him up for about another minute. Seth shoves Brock, knocks the ref out of the ring, which is when he implies one of, like, 5 known techniques to beat Brock Lesnar and punches him in the dick.
That's what you gotta do. Brock Lesnar's weak point is his penis.
Yep. And so, he beats him. Seth has a move called, it was originally called the curb stomp, but they thought that was too violent, so now it's referred to as just the stomp.
It's a problematic name.
It is. But he hits 3 stomps on him. End of story. 1, 2, 3, we get our second feel-good moment of the night. Brock is no longer champion. We have another full-time champ. Hopefully a fighting champ. We'll see if he drops it back
Brock
because...
leaves.
Yeah. You know, every single time they've talked, they have mentioned Las Vegas. He's not on the show. It was really weird for Raw and SmackDown. The losers weren't on there at all, basically. And so we don't know, but they... It's been rumored he's going back to UFC. We'll see.
Oh, goody.
We move on to the next match, which is one that definitely pains me to talk about. AJ Styles versus Randy Orton.
What could go wrong in a Randy Orton match?
AJ Styles, for those of you who are curious, is one of my favorite and one of Josh's favorite wrestlers.
Yeah. I was too mean there. Randy Orton's actually a lot better than he used to be. He's pretty good. He just definitely has nights where he works and he doesn't necessarily want to work, if that makes sense.
And they had an okay match, and that's the thing that pains me to say. For about 4 years, AJ's had the sleeper hit almost every single match, to include a straight-up normal match with Shane McMahon, who we'll see later, and it was actually a fairly decent match. AJ, like I said, is one of the best workers in the world. Randy is known to be a bit boring, but he can work, and when he does, it's incredible. And so the basic deal is Randy came up in WWE. Randy's a WWE homegrown boy. AJ Styles worked his way through the indies, cough, cough, TNA. But then Japan, and then to WWE.
Yeah, it's funny how he would, I would have to say, became a bigger star once he was in New Japan.
Yeah. For Dixie Carter's promotion, for anyone who's curious what TNA is, it's a...
Thank God, not called that anymore.
Yeah. No longer called that.
It's now Impact Wrestling, which it probably should have been several years ago. And people seem to be running it competently these days, so good on them.
Yeah. It was a good promotion. It's actually the promotion I start watching, so I have a bit of a connection to it, which is why I like AJ so much. I started with AJ.
About 03 to 06 or 07, it was really a good show.
It was. Then they tried to become WWE Lite. They brought in a bunch of ex-WWE superstars and just fell apart, and in all honesty. One of the things they did is, I think, the reason that WWE refuses to talk about them, which is the inclusion of Flair after Flair retired from WWE in one of the most perfect fashions you would have ever seen. But it's a good match, but it's not a great match, and that sort of thing is, this could have ended a SmackDown or ended a Raw as a main event there. They don't live up to a Mania hype. Still, they're good. You know, they're both longtime veterans. I think it's, you know, we hate to admit it, partial age between the two of them. Neither one of them is a spring chicken. They're both getting close to retirement age, so.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to imagine, like, even a bad match between AJ Styles and Orton would still probably be pretty good.
Yeah. It's so good. So, next match, the SmackDown Tag Team Champions are the Usos defending against The Bar, Shinsuke Nakamura and Rusev, which doesn't have an official name, and Ricochet and Aleister Black, who do not have an official name either. This was a fun match to watch. The people I were with really liked this match. It was a lot more energetic and fast-moving than the AJ and Randy match. Everyone got in their spots. I think the big one for this one was watching Ricochet be in the giant swing, which is literally... every single dad's done is just pick up the person and spin him in circles.
Yeah.
And he spinned him probably a good 20 or 30 times while Sheamus does the beats of something. Irish. Sheamus is an Irish gentleman, but he just slaps him across the chest and they did it for probably a good minute and a half and people went nuts during it.
Jeez.
The one thing that I will say about it is it's the triple threat tag team that I don't like.
Yeah,
which is,
like, it would be a
well, no, it's the match style that I don't like. If you're going to do a triple threat tag team, just put three people in the ring for each tag team, please. Instead, it's two people in the ring, and everyone can tag out anyone else. And it leads to a kind of chaotic thing of, who's the actual person, especially when people keep jumping in the ring every 5 minutes.
Everyone has Freebird rules right now.
Yeah. It ends with the Usos going over after a double dive off the ropes to Sheamus. They retain their titles. The following match, a falls count anywhere between Shane McMahon and The Miz. So this is an interesting storyline going into this. At a show in Saudi Arabia, which a show in Saudi Arabia, which I refuse to watch, Shane McMahon won a contest saying that he was the best in the world, a contest that only featured Americans, by the way. Oh, and, So, he won the statue. At this point in time, Shane McMahon is still fairly a good guy. He is still a babyface. The Miz comes up to him and says, you know, my father really never loved me. He said, this is literally the storyline is. My father never really loved me. He always said that I wish you were more like Shane McMahon, because he's a real man. He is awesome. You should be like Shane McMahon. So I think if me and you tag teamed...
I don't believe you.
Now this is actually how it goes. If me and you tag teamed, My father would love me a whole lot more, so Shane, me and you should be a tag team. What do you think? He calls for a match. He loses against some jobbers just because. He calls for another match. He goes to Vince McMahon and asks permission to be a tag team partner with Shane. He eventually wins Shane over. They become tag team partners. They do get the belts. I forget who they won the belts off of.
Oh, man. There's decent odds it was probably the Usos. Could not have been, but...
Yeah, I cannot...
Forever.
Oh, well, yeah. They get the belts. Their first title defense versus the Usos. They lose. Shane gets mad. Shane grabs... He hurts Miz's dad, quote-unquote, which is he grabs his face and then slightly pushes him down into his own chair. He then, that is his heel turn. Shane is now a bad guy. Every single time he comes down to the ring, he forces the announcer to announce him as the best in the world, and he has to announce it with enough gusto, which they did here, like, three times, nice. Getting the gusto. Because it seems like it's leading into a feud where Shane's going to be feuding with the announcer. Which is kind of weird. That's
weird.
Yeah, it is.
This is a stolen joke, and I will full-on credit whoever it was as soon as I remember who it was. I think it was on someone I listened to today. But they said that this should have been a Falls Count Somewhere match. And I guess you just got to figure out where that somewhere is.
Yeah. So, Falls Count Anywhere means you can go anywhere in the arena. They very famously, I believe, did one at Mania where... Someone drove a golf cart off an edge and was like 5 feet away from hitting the main fuse box for the arena.
I want to say that was Raven.
Yeah, Raven drove a golf cart off an edge and was 5 feet off of literally blacking out the entire arena and ending the show right then and there.
I know that they also completely destroyed a part of the arena that they were not supposed to have destroyed during that match, which yeah. was awesome.
This is nowhere near that quality, unfortunately, because of different air.
Okay, so I'm going to take a wild guess that something high was jumped off of.
Kind of. We'll get to that. They start in the ring. Shane gets the upper hand very quickly. To the point that he's about to go, Shane has what's called the coast-to-coast. He jumps off of one buckle to the other side of the ring with a kick. Before he's about to do it, the Miz's dad comes in the ring and stands in front of his son bravely. And then says, I'll fight you.
This didn't happen.
Yeah, it did. Attempts to put up his hands. He has his hands way too far out. Shane jokingly goes over and sets his hands in the correct position and then throws, if you've ever seen Shane McMahon wrestle, he throws these little baby mini punches out.
They're not good.
They're not good at all, and it's weird that he still does it. He throws like four of those into Miz's dad. Miz throws Shane into the crowd, into a bunch of chairs, starts hollering for a trainer to come over and start taking care of his dad. They fight out in the crowd, They get up to a platform. They get onto a camera platform, and I guess this is the part that you had to be in the arena, because you couldn't really see it, but I guess the camera platform was about 15 feet in the air.
Okay.
And Shane, Miz superplexes Shane off the camera platform into awaiting cardboard boxes, because that's just how it works nowadays.
Yeah.
In the chaos that ensued, Shane's arm fell on top of Miz, so Shane gets the pinfall and wins this match.
I gotta say, that didn't sound good.
It was okay. Like I said, that's the thing. With a Falls Count Anywhere, so Shane McMahon's not a trained wrestler, and he's really good at jumping off of things and getting hurt.
Yeah, that's a shtick.
And the fact that it had neither one of those was interesting. Except for, like I said, the final fall. But the next match we come to, the brand new women's tag team titles. WWE is currently retconning history and pretending that they're the very first women's tag team titles. Though, to Beth Phoenix's credit, she did bring it up when she was an announcer. But she is actually back in this match.
As well as she should be. She's great.
She is. So... Bayley and Sasha, the Boston Hug Connection. Terrible.
I stand for them. They're great.
They're great. Terrible name. The Iconics.
I don't like them.
You're not supposed to. That's sort of the thing. Is to give them credit, their gimmick is they're annoying, and they do it well. It works.
Every time they are on the mic, I What's muted?
WWE also has a bad habit of dropping things off of wrestlers when they get called to the main roster, and so in NXT, the Iconics were known as the Iconic Duo, kind of a bit of a play on the Dynamic Duo, and now they're just the Iconics. So I don't really think one of them wrestled in NXT. I think she was like more of a manager than anything.
They're not related in any way, are they?
No, but they're best friends, and that's sort of the cool thing about it, if you want to look at it. And I'm surprised WWE didn't play up this angle, but I guess since they're the heels, they couldn't. They're from Australia, they trained together, they were teenage fans, they trained in the same school, got accepted at the same time, called up to the main roster at the same time, and within their first year, they're at Mania, they're in a match with, as I said, Bayley, Sasha, and I forgot to mention the other one, Nia Jax and Tamina, which are the Samoan Slaughterhouse, though they don't often get called that, I don't know why, and in all honesty, they're kind of boring.
Yeah.
They're two big hoss women that are together.
Nia Jax was actually kind of good for a while, and then she wasn't.
Yeah.
It was strange.
It's weird. She works too fast and has a reputation of being an unsafe wrestler, unfortunately.
I still like her, but yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, we get on this match. I forgot to mention Beth Phoenix and Natalya. Forgive me.
Yes.
The pinup strong, though once again I don't think that name is mentioned either. The match goes on. It's a decent match. It can be a bit sloppy at times, as I said. Iconics and both Nia Jax and Tamina are unfortunately semi-sloppy workers at times. The match ends with a kind of cool spot where Beth Phoenix does a glam slam off the second rope to Bayley.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that was a cool thing to see and watch. She is thrown out of the ring, and the Iconics tag back in, because as I said, it's a weird format of two people at the same time. One of the Iconics blind tagged her while she was standing on top of the ropes. She is thrown out, she pins, and the Iconics are now your female tag team champions.
That sucks.
It does, but as I said...
That's, for context, basically getting dropped on your face from a good couple of feet up.
Yeah. It was probably one of the cooler, unfortunately, one of the cooler women's spots that were done. The very next match, we get two controversial opinion, what in all honesty should have been the main event of the show. The women have worked hard. The women deserved a main event at a Mania. Unfortunately, I think this was the better told story. This had the better stakes to it.
Yeah.
It, in all honesty, really should have been the main event.
I think it should have been second to last.
Or second to last, but Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan. So for anyone who's unaware, Kofi Kingston's been in the company forever. He was always been...
It's been there so long that he stopped being Jamaican.
He's always been an exciting, he's always been a fan favorite. He was always, like, the super babyface. And then, once Kofi Kingston was one time given a shot versus Randy Orton, he was about to be given a push. He did something incorrect. I forget what it is.
It's literally been a decade, I don't remember.
Yeah, I think he kicked out of a move that he wasn't supposed to. And AJ calls him, Randy called him an idiot, and that was the end of his push. He eventually joins a tag team called The New Day. They start out as religious heels and eventually become...
Is that what they were supposed to be?
Yeah, they were religious heels.
They never spoke to anything other than just being positive, and eventually it just sort of worked out.
Yeah, they were religious heels originally. Then eventually they got themselves over. Eventually they became the longest reigning tag team champion. Though I think there was an insult at who the team was prior to it. I forget who it was. But if I remember correctly, WWE does not like them. They become the longest reigning tag team champions. Kofi kicks it around with the New Day for a while. Until Elimination Chamber, another wrestler that goes by Mustafa Ali, now just Ali, was supposed to be in that match. He unfortunately gets injured during a house show, which are shows that are not shown on television. It is very sad. Kofi is given his spot, and the crowd just goes nuts for Kofi. And so, at Elimination Chamber, Kofi is the last one to be eliminated by Daniel Bryan to retain. And as I said, the crowd is just going nuts. Everything's just happening so fast. They're chanting Kofi. Everyone at Elimination Chamber wanted Kofi, to the point that, in all honesty, no matter what their plans were, their plans suddenly became Daniel Bryan versus Kofi.
This is a bookend of how Daniel Bryan came up to his first title win, basically.
Yeah, and that was kind of cool part, and they literally mention it. Daniel literally mentions it when he uses a term that was given to Daniel Bryan, which is a B-plus player, and that is given to Kofi in this setting. And so Kofi comes out. He is told that if he wins a match, he'll be a number one contender. He wins that match. Vince McMahon comes out and says, no. Come have a gauntlet match. Kofi comes out and has a gauntlet match. Vince McMahon says,
that being a match that you have to wear while wearing gauntlets. I said that wrong. That was a bad joke. Anyway, go on.
Gauntlet match being, he had to fight five guys in the exact same night. He wins that. Vince McMahon comes out and says, no. One more.
God damn it, this is not what you're supposed to be doing.
Daniel Bryan comes out and is like, you have to beat Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan beats him. The New Day come out. They pretend that they're going to quit. They call out Vince McMahon. Before Vince can speak, Daniel Bryan comes out, cuts off Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon gets mad, and basically because he's like, because you disrespected me and cut me off, New Day, you are going to be given a chance to help Kofi. Y'all win a gauntlet match, New Day. Then Kofi will go to WrestleMania. New Day wins that gauntlet match. Kofi gets a shot at WrestleMania. When it comes to the match, it is a very good match. Both of these are good workers. Kofi's fast, quick, has a weird-looking chest, as many people talked about for some odd reason. Daniel Bryan, for those of you who don't know who he is, he's very slow, methodical. He's a submission wrestler.
He's one of the best. He's probably not even supposed to be in the ring, if we want to be honest about it, because of his concussion difficulties.
Yes.
But he's back, and he's doing things, and he had to change up his style and probably not fly around as much as he used to.
Well, not fly around, and secondly, when he does drop kicks, because that was one of his thing.
Yeah.
He lands now on his shoulder instead of his head. I don't know if it's necessarily better. It's a dislocated shoulder's a whole lot better than a concussion, so.
Yeah, it's like how Ric Flair would take backdrops because of having a broken back, where he would just literally almost land on his side. I'm like, yeah, it seems like it's going to cause more problems.
Yeah. But they put on a good match. The biggest feel-good moment of the night, Kofi wins the WWE Championship, first time in 10 years, or 10 or 11, one of the two, forgive me. As I said, the crowd goes nuts. This was in New Jersey at an open-air arena, and so this is what I was explaining to my friends.
Is this Jersey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they can't, because WWE started in New York, if they're going to Jersey, they always say in the shadow of New York. So they were in the shadow of New York the whole entire time. But the crowd, you can hear audible Kofi chants from the crowd, which in an open-air arena probably requires 60 to 70% of the crowd to be heard. And so that's how many people were cheering Kofi to win. Kofi wins. It's a big emotional moment. His family comes into the ring with him. Daniel Bryan was carrying around a custom championship that he had made out of hemp and fallen wood.
Yeah, the title belt slapped. It's cool.
I liked it. A lot of people got pissed. A lot of people hated it. I thought it was cool.
It totally matched the character. And
it did.
I think he actually did source some of that himself for it to be made.
Yes. Big E reveals that he has a present. He reveals the original WWE Championship. Though I think he might have restudded the WWE with new diamonds. At least it looks newer and cleaner than it's ever looked.
Yeah, I'm sure they
did something.
Keep making them.
Yeah. And gives that to Kofi. As I said, big emotional moment. what is our come down from this, the very next match?
I'm very happy for him. He definitely deserves to be champion, and it's cool because, you know, I'm a very, very, very white man, but I definitely see that representation matters, and I'm glad that we do have a black WWE champion because, you know, there's been kids who have probably seen that for so long that it's always like a white guy, but I mean, there was The Rock for sure, but it's probably not my place to say anything like that, but it's cool, and I hope that there are some kids who are looking up to him.
Yeah, that was definitely Big E drives that point home, talking about that he doesn't only want to change WWE, that he wants to change society, and having Kofi holding the belt helps that. So our come down after all that is an unfortunate squash match.
Okay.
Now what that means is...
it's very short.
It is very short. United States Champion Samoa Joe versus Rey Mysterio. They come out. Rey hits him with a 619. Slips on the top rope, as slips, quote-unquote, which allows him to fall directly into Samoa Joe, into a coquina clutch, choked out in under 60 seconds.
That's cool.
It is cool, and...
I didn't expect Ray to, like, be cool with that, but maybe he's a pretty chill guy.
Apparently, the reason actually is that Ray was injured during a previous match, and they had to work around it, and so it helps Joe look cool.
Yeah.
Joe, for those of you, is one of the fastest big men in the company, and
once kidnapped by ninjas.
Yeah.
We don't know why it was never resolved.
The crowd literally chants, "Joe's gonna kill you." That is his character. He is a killer, and so Ray is one of my favorites. It sucks to see one of your heroes go down like that, but it does at least help Joe look better.
It reestablishes him because some of his shine probably had been lost over the years.
Yeah. Because, unfortunately, in WWE, he was considered a mega heel, and it is the heel's job to lose, and unfortunately, they probably did that a bit too much with Joe.
Yeah.
The first non-squash match after that is Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre.
Hey, I'm watching the show now.
Yeah. So, as you saw, this match was surprisingly not as big a knockdown dragout as people thought. It kind of started that way, and then just got into kind of normal wrestling. So, the story is, Roman Reigns was picked as the golden boy in WWE.
People, nobody liked that.
Yeah. People hated it beyond belief. He eventually wins the title. It kind of starts working. Not really.
It was a weird thing, because we all, I think, as a collective, liked him. And, like, I have no problem with the guy whatsoever. I think he's pretty chill. But it was just too much too soon the way that they pushed him, and I think he suffered for that when it really wasn't his fault whatsoever.
Yeah, there's what's referred to as the Super Cena era with John Cena, where John Cena won everything and he became Superman. It's boring to watch Superman, and that unfortunately got brought over to Roman Reigns. So, tragedy happens. Roman had leukemia. It resurfaces. Roman has to be off television getting chemo treatment to take care of the leukemia. Roman makes his triumphant comeback. Roman makes his comeback. And this is his first match back since coming back onto television. His first singles match back. He has wrestled because he was also part of the Shield with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. He has wrestled as part of the Shield. Now,
do you need me to vamp for a minute?
What?
Do you need me to vamp for a minute?
You're good.
Okay.
Drew McIntyre, so he was Vince McMahon's chosen one, and that's what he originally came from. He is a Scottish man.
Yeah, he was gone for years.
Yeah. He's boring. He eventually stuck as part of a joke team that two people are fired from. All three of them are now working back in the WWE again.
That's interesting, yeah.
One of them actually won the title, but we'll get to that another day. Drew McIntyre, he kind of sets the path as he leaves the WWE. I think he says it like 8 years. he spends in the indies rebuilding himself.
Learning a new hold.
Learning just everything brand new. And he comes back as the Scottish psychopath Drew McIntyre.
He seems like, I don't know, just something about him does seem different at the very least compared to how he used to be.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just that he grew a beard.
Grew a beard and got way more jacked.
Yeah.
Anyways, he spends a ton of time beating up Roman Reigns on Raw. We come to this match. As I said, it was supposed to be a bit more knockout, drag-out people thought it would be.
Yeah.
It, unfortunately, kind of sort of slips and fails on that.
I mean, it's like, from what I saw of it, because I think I joined the broadcast about midway through that one, it seemed like it was fine. If you said that was the first time he had been back in the ring for however long it was?
Singles competition.
Okay. That may have had something to do with it.
Yeah, he may have had a little, what's referred to as ring rust from...
Right, yeah.
Not doing it.
You know, he won. He's back. He's looking good. And people seem to like him again. So, cool.
Kind of. There were audible boos. A few of the reviews that I have read it talked about how disappointed they were. And we'll actually come to that in the WWE universe. That they still were getting audible boos. People were still yelling Vince's boy at you. There were still just some fans that refused to let it go.
Yeah,
no matter what. But so the very next thing we come up to is the for the arena. I use this term, unfortunately this term is a derogatory term in wrestling, but in the arena when you're sitting there you needed this. It is the intermission, it's the bathroom break. So we come to a bit with Elias coming out. So Elias comes on the screen. Elias is a musician. And that's his gimmick in WWE.
He legitimately has an album on iTunes.
Yeah. He is legitimately... They tried to put a concert, but it failed miserably. But Elias...
Nobody attended because he was a heel.
Yeah.
There. I just fixed it for you. Pay me.
Elias comes out, or it starts a vignette on the screen where it shows Elias playing the piano. Then it cuts to Elias playing the drums.
Yeah.
Then it cuts to Elias doing his shtick in the ring with a guitar. He starts playing, he gets a jazz rhythm. In the middle of it, it randomly gets cut off by a bunch of grainy photos.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I was real confused.
Everyone was. A lot of people thought that a wrestler that's done this before by the name of Bray Wyatt was coming back. Turns out, no, it's not Bray Wyatt. It's something... No one ever probably could have predicted. After the grainy photo, it cuts to Babe Ruth calling his shots.
Yep. Because, oops, yeah. We thought we were in New York.
I guess. Something no one could have predicted. John Cena appears.
But now, not just any John Cena. It's the one we like.
It is Dr. Thugonomics version 1. White boy rapper John Cena comes down to the ring. I'll let you take this, Josh.
Woo! I gotta tell you, for the first time in a decade, I was amped to see John Cena. Which, we've watched many WrestleManias together, and normally John Cena's appearance was kind of a downer.
Yeah.
Because we knew what was gonna happen, and other than that time that The Miz beat him, and it was awesome, no pun intended... it's just, you know, Cena's here, he's gonna win. But instead, we got 2002 to 2003 Cena, who is fantastic. Yes, he raps, if you can call it that. We'll say for the purpose of kayfabe that yes, he does. I guess enough to have put out an album, which I haven't listened to in full, but maybe we will for the show one day. But yeah, it was a good segment. He comes out, he raps, he cuts his rap-style promo, gives Elias the FU, which is the non-PC version of the Attitude Adjustment, and it was cool. Did he say anything too troubling during that promo?
No, he didn't.
That used to be his thing was, I'm John Cena and you're gay! Basically in every promo, which... Now, obviously, it doesn't look too good, but, you know, whatever. It was it was the time.
Yes, it was an unfortunate time. No, he kind of pokes fun at a few of his films. He pokes fun at, as I said, Super Cena. People always want him to turn heel.
Yes, we do.
And so he does poke fun of that by the line, "Unfortunately, last year standing in the ring with John Cena, gonna go heel." White boy rapper John Cena wears brass knuckles down to the ring.
Yeah.
He punches with brass knuckles.
One says word, one says life.
Yeah. He does F you. And that is the end of the segment. As I said, I was laughing.
10 out of 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Give us more, please.
I popped so hard, meaning I cheered so hard. I was laughing so hard. This was a fantastic segment. The next one we move on to is unfortunately another one that was supposed to be a knockout dragout, but this is even more. I really think y'all are too old to be doing this anymore. A no holds bar, meaning no rules. It's one of 20 million different ways that WWE says no rules. Triple H versus Batista, aka Drax the Destroyer in Guardians of the Galaxy.
He could have won if he just stood still.
Yeah, he never would have seen him. But, so Triple H, he's always there at WrestleMania. It's always fun.
Yeah, he's got to, you know, take some time off from being NXT's dad to go have a match on the weekend.
That being said, they're both, unfortunately, a bit too old to be able to go anymore. And so, even with a no-holds-bar stipulation, there wasn't really anything. He bent his fingers back in a plier, which we've seen, truth be told, he could have done with his hand.
Yeah.
Shayna Baszler, NXT, does it by just stepping on your hand and then bending it, which looks way better than what he does, bending it with the pliers. He rips his nose ring out, but not really, and it's like the world's least amount of blood for a piercing that's ever been ripped out.
I'll just say that I honestly thought this match would have already happened by the time I was watching, and it was okay for what it was, which was just basically a violent spot fest between, and I mean literally violent spots, using the pliers, using various weapons, not breaking the tables repeatedly. It was two cool entrances, which I told Ryan to drink if they're overindulgent entrances, to which Batista responded by coming out in an SUV with a security detail. And Triple H had apparently just seen Mad Max Fury Road and came out with a weird CG video of things driving through the desert, and he came out on a big, stupid, ridiculous hot rod, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. Kind of an inside baseball thing here. I guess there were reports of people in the ring saying that there was no valets driving those cars, and so that it took them a good minute or two to be able to park the cars because they weren't trained to do that.
Okay.
And so while they were trying to park the cars, like, no one knew how to parallel park. And then Triple H. So yeah, like, they had to sit there and stall for time. And that's why a lot of people were saying it was ruined by Michael Cole at the very end of Triple H going, "Wow, that was cool." And that was his call.
I'll just get out of the way. Batista slipped getting in the ring.
Yeah, he also slipped getting in the ring.
But you know what? It happens.
Even my non-wrestling fans caught that. Depending on the air, "you messed up" / "you effed up" chant would have normally ensued. But
I trip over stuff all the time. I'm not going to crucify anybody over that.
Now, this angle actually kicked off with Batista attacking Ric Flair.
Yep.
Quote-unquote attacking.
On his birthday.
On his birthday.
That dick.
So Ric Flair comes out at the last second and hands a sledgehammer to Triple H. Sweet chin music with the sledgehammer. Sweet Hammer Music is called, or something.
Sweet Hammer Music?
Something like that.
That was the name of MC Hammer's EP.
Yeah, was it?
No. Actually, the way they ended it was kind of cool. When Triple H used the stairs and jumped up and just hit him like Thor, basically.
Yeah.
I'll give that a nod, because that got me amped up again, because I had gotten bored mid-match. But then it ends, and Triple H and Ric Flair share a weirdly intimate moment in which they embrace for an uncomfortable amount of time, and then we move on.
Surprisingly, his wife didn't come out, actually.
Yeah!
I probably lost money because of that. No, So we move on to the most controversial match of all of WrestleMania.
Okay.
Baron Corbin.
Oh yeah.
Versus Kurt Angle. So
fuck this from memory.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is that was it was literally that controversial.
Nobody wanted this.
Nobody. Kurt Angle, one of the best wrestlers to ever step in the ring. A legitimate Olympic, won a gold medal with a broken freaking neck.
Yeah, I feel like if MMA had popped off earlier, he would have been in that and been an absolute killer.
Yeah. But Kurt Angle, he's fighting Baron Corbin, who is...
awful.
Yeah. A controversial figure, to say the least.
Baron Corbin reminds me of someone very specific from my life, and this is the most inside baseball Josh it will probably ever get. That's a lie. It'll probably get a lot worse. But I knew this guy in high school in my East Lab class, which was just a computer class, and he would constantly draw really buff anthro wolves. And I was like, what's up with the furry drawings, man? And he's like, they're not furry drawings. And I'm like, okay, it's fine. Live your truth. I'm not here to judge. And he had a wolf motif early on. He used to have horrible hair. Don't know what his gimmick was. He has a finisher called the Deep Six. Has no theme to water whatsoever. I guess that could also be a reference to being 6 feet under.
He was a biker, basically. Yeah, he was a biker referred to as the Lone Wolf.
He sucked.
And
that's not much better.
He eventually became the GM of Raw. Yeah, he sucked at doing that, too.
He wore business casual, and for some reason still does.
Yeah.
He did cut his hair off, which, thank God, he looked like a decent human being at that point. I'm sure he's probably a totally decent guy. I think he said some things about concussions that he should not have said once. But otherwise...
He said something about concussions. He went after some people on Twitter. Some guy came at him. He went after back, and it just... happened to be the guy who was a Marine, and he got in a lot of trouble for that. It's like, that wasn't really his fault. The guy came at him first. But, now, he's a very polarizing figure, because, as I said, he's fast in the ring, and that's kind of it. Like, he doesn't have very many skills. He doesn't have a memorable look. He doesn't have a memorable gimmick. But WWE has always pushed him as one of their biggest bad guys, because he is technically one of their biggest bad guys, but
yeah,
just because...
nobody likes him.
He sucks. It's not because he's a good bad guy like Samoa Joe we talked about earlier.
He's not even necessarily bad in the ring. He just doesn't do it for me in any capacity.
Or really anyone else. Kurt Angle, as I said, one of the best to ever step in the ring. This is his retirement match.
Yeah.
And so,
what a way to go.
People really think that Kurt deserved a better opponent, but WWE wants to keep building one of the best heels. And unfortunately, to do that, Baron is, unfortunately, whether or not people like it, one of the top heels in the company. So they gave him Baron, they go up, they have the match, End of Days, which is one of the very few people, which is one of, like, six moves in WWE history that no one's kicked out of yet, which is his other finish besides Deep Six is End of Days, 1-2-3. Kurt, when he originally started, he was a oblivious heel, so he acted like he was the good guy and that people hated him for some odd reason.
Yeah.
That was the gimmick, is people hated him and he didn't know that people hated him.
Pretty
so
much.
When he first came out, people always chanted, "You suck" at him. And so ever since then, it's become part of his legacy. He asked the crowd to chant, "You suck" one last time for him, and he... moves on with his life.
Yeah, they tried to sell it at some point that him being told that he sucks, like, just motivates him to go out and do better. And I'm like, I guess that spin works. Somebody had a very heartwarming sign that said, "You never sucked."
Yeah, I like that one.
So he lost.
Yeah. Like I said, in the days, that was one thing I forgot to mention about AJ versus Randy. AJ kicked out of the RKO, which is... extremely rare, like, only one people do it a year. Like,
come out of nowhere?
Kind of. Like, only one or two people a year kick out of the RKO. That is a very well-protected finisher.
Well, at least Kurt came out and beat him up the next night.
Yeah.
Because, I guess, cool violence.
Yeah, just keep back. So the next one we see, an Intercontinental Championship between the Demon, Finn Balor, and Bobby Lashley.
At this point, I flipped out because I thought this would have been further down the card. No disrespect to either one of them, but it just made me wonder what they were doing the whole time that the show had been on for 18 hours.
Yeah, I was expecting... I actually thought this would be second. And then...
Yeah.
I thought this would be the first title, not the very third to last title.
Yeah, again, no disrespect intended to either of them. I think Finn Balor is great. That's actually one of my daughter's only male wrestlers that she likes. And Bobby Lashley is... a lot improved since he left and came back. So, there you go.
He's no longer a bath turd. But, yeah. Finn Balor comes out. In all honesty, his intro is one of the coolest parts. He's in interesting makeup. Instead of, traditionally, he, like, puts a jaw on his neck. And he didn't do that this time. And so, that missing when he comes out as the Demon... it's really hard to, it was, like, I had to sit there and insist with the people that I'm watching with. I'm like, no. The Demon's really cool. Finn is really cool. Yes, he's in the weird black makeup. I don't know if you, as you pointed out, if this was hints towards his friends in New Japan.
Because he was one of the founding members in Bullet Club, and I thought that his paint looked a little bit like what the Gorillas of Destiny wear. But it's entirely possible I was reading way too much into it.
It's entirely possible. It's weird that he went total black. There was a question of, is he doing blackface? I'm like, no, he's not doing blackface at all, but the fact that the face paint is total black, and then he didn't really, like, traditionally he plays up a bit more with the fire shooting up and coming up, and he didn't really do that. He kind of just, like, crawled all the way down to the ring, and I'm like...
there was enough red mixed in there.
Yeah. Like, he crawled all the way down to the ring instead of doing his traditional, like, popping up for the fire shooting and things like that.
Yeah.
So, like, anyways, it was an interesting opening.
It was a quick but good match. Bobby Lashley got some sort of crazy upgrade where he got his cool eyes at some point.
Yeah.
Off screen.
Bobby Lashley comes down, as he said, legitimately good worker, legitimately scary man, and also another MMA fighter.
They have realized to not have him talk as much, except that one time when they had that segment with his relatives or something, which was uncomfortable.
Yeah, about to say, that's another something we may talk about later. It's coming up, actually. But Bobby Lashley, they actually given him a mouthpiece in a kid that is like 30 years younger than him.
Yeah, Leo Rush, he's great.
He is. The match happens. It's a short match. Both men look good. There's nothing wrong with it. Finn Balor defeats Bobby Lashley to win back the Intercontinental Champion.
I'd say it was fine.
Yeah. We come to the main push, the biggest, most exciting match of the night. The thing WWE has sacrificed like half the women's division for, unfortunately. The main event, Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey versus Charlotte Flair.
I was excited and exhausted.
Yeah. So we get throwback gimmicks by Charlotte. Charlotte Flair is Ric Flair's daughter, so every WrestleMania she has a tendency to do a throwback to one of her father's more famous intros.
Yeah.
This time she came out of a helicopter.
Was baller as fuck.
It was. It was kind of weird for two things. One, they shot it the night before, and you can tell, in particular, because they didn't turn on the lights in the arena, so all the lights are turned off when they turn around towards the arena.
I didn't notice that, but oh well.
And two, they show people bringing out a red carpet, but I guess they only had, like, 3 feet of carpet, because they turn around, once again, to the camera, and she walks, like, it's not even enough for the camera to turn around. It's literally in the front shot, the camera turned around, and the red carpet's no longer there, and I'm like, you probably should, like, yes, she's a Flair. Yes, it's glamorous. You might have wanted to leave off the...
Well, I mean, you know, Flair's also got a budget, and maybe there wasn't enough in it for all the carpet.
But, yeah.
Helicopters and robes are expensive, man.
They are. But, So, the story of... The biggest story going into this is Becky Lynch, the man. It was meant to be Becky Lynch, the man, versus Ronda Rousey, one-on-one. Once again, Vince came out and said, no. She's going to be fighting Charlotte. Becky says... Becky goes through an ordeal, wins her right to face Charlotte and Ronda Rousey. Rousey, who premiered last year at WrestleMania after retiring from MMA. A lot of people kind of dislike her as a outsider coming into the industry. You know, she's given all the opportunities when people have worked their way through. A lot of people want to say that she sucks, but in all honesty, she's good in the ring.
Yeah, she took to it very naturally. Some MMA people don't, and some do, and she, I think, being a fan for her, having... Wow, let me restart that whole sentence because I just completely dumped all my brain data files out. I think having been a fan before she came in, on top of being an MMA fighter, helped her out a lot because she had decent ideas of how to handle herself and how to present herself. I do believe that she was legitimately friends with, to some degree, Roddy Piper. I know that kind of his... What do I want to say? Not necessarily his gimmicks, but his attire and style, she did get his blessing to kind of use.
They apparently trained judo together.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so she's known as Roddy Ronda Rousey in the WWE, which will come into play in a second. But anyways, Becky was always, has been a fan favorite. Yeah, she's one of the four horsewomen.
She became Stone Cold Steve Austin one day, and it was great.
Yeah. She was always happy-go-lucky, always I'm gonna do it.
Not
she,
sure what her gimmick was exactly.
Being like, steampunk, which is what, in all honesty, drew me to her in the first place. She was...
Doesn't translate well to wrestling.
No. Marty Scurll kind of pulls it, but he also has Bird, and that's why. But, she one day says, enough is enough. It's actually supposed to be a heel turn for her, but the fans refuse to boo her, and she ends up becoming the biggest babyface in the company next to Kofi Kingston.
It happens.
She becomes Stone Cold Steve Austin, says, I don't care anymore. She does eventually win the title. She wins it off of Charlotte. So Ric Flair used to have a saying going, if you're going to be the man, you have to beat the man. And so that's where, Becky picks up the moniker The Man from, because as I said, she was meant to be a villain, so that's supposed to be mocking her friend Charlotte, who was half face, half villain at this point in time, and eventually just becomes full villain. By the end of this, before this match, she is eventually a full villain. As I said, it's a decent match. There are a few sloppy bits, to including the ending.
I can speak to that to a certain degree, because I know that at some point, Ronda broke her hand, apparently.
Yeah.
And I never could actually tell during the course of the match, but it would make sense of a lot of things.
Yeah, it did, and that's sort of the thing.
Props to her for just not selling that at all.
Very much.
Break most of the bones in your hand, you would have some reaction to it. But she didn't.
But there's an unfortunate thing with the ending where, and this is sort of the thing that I don't know if the broken hand came into play. Ronda goes for a Piper's Pit. As we said, she knew Ronda, Roddy Ronda Riper.
Wow. That was...
That was mouth mush.
Yeah.
Roddy Ronda.
I got you. Yeah. She knew Roddy Piper and chained with him.
Correct. She goes for the Piper's Pit. Becky goes to do... Becky rolls her back on her shoulders and starts pinning her. One, and yeah, this is where it may have been that she might have... This is probably may have been one of the only reactions to her hurting her hand. So, one, her shoulders pop up clearly.
Did they?
Yeah. She is then put back down. Two, three. And so... the ref either doesn't notice or need it to restart the... Yeah.
And I've seen the match twice.
He probably, in all honesty, should have restarted the count. So that's where a kind of sort of controversial WWE's entirely seems to be entirely ignoring it ending comes from. We'll find out, I guess, next week. Yeah. But
I just thought that basically she won because she outsmarted her. And
yeah, she did, and that's the thing is, I think it was meant to be a legit clean ending that either the guy started counting too early or they weren't in position. But yeah, it's one, shoulders up, back down, two, three.
Okay.
She also did something that, as you said, Rhonda is a wrestling fan, and so she did something that heels do that I don't think she realized what it was for. That was kind of funny, but it was kind of cool to see an old school move of, she pointed at the ref and went, "Get down there and count." Now, the reason that a heel used to do that is because it would hide their cheating. They'd make sure that they were staring only at the pin. They weren't staring at, Rick used to put his like feet up on the ropes or them grabbing something. And so she goes, "Get down there and count," to the ref, and he gets down there and starts counting for a kick out. But she didn't do any heel things to justify saying "get down there or count," which...
This is, for the moment, apparently Rhonda's swan song. I think she's going to be off TV for quite a bit until she figures out what she wants to do. I know that she may be appearing on the next season of Total Divas, which they really got to update that name. I don't know what else they would call it, though.
Yeah.
She said "bitch" a whole lot during this match.
That she did.
Which, you know, I have no qualms with, but I don't know if she's... I think she's supposed to be a heel, because she's been doing the whole "this isn't even real" shtick.
Yeah, that's something that we can get into later. The build toward WrestleMania, they did a lot of "this isn't real" things, and it's like...
You don't want to do that. Like, we know.
We know it's not real, and yeah. We watch to pretend it is. Yeah. Alright, so...
I got something I want to talk about.
Okay.
My favorite moment from this WrestleMania and this match was Rhonda proclaiming to Charlotte, "You chop like a bitch." To which Charlotte replied, "I chop like a bitch." To which Rhonda then said, "Yeah, you chop," and then she got backhanded across the face. It was just such a good moment that it was really blink and you miss it, but whoo, it was good.
That it was. There's a lot of good stuff. Like I said, these women can have chemistry. That sort of thing is the unfortunate ending. Unfortunately, yeah, Rhonda breaking her hand doesn't work out, you know.
Yeah, I don't think you want to do that.
Yeah. Might have stalled a little bit, made it a little bit sloppier.
She got some gnarly bruises on her leg, too.
Yeah.
I don't know what caused that, but something.
All three women were actually bleeding by the end of this, which caught me off guard. I'm like, huh.
I don't know what Becky Lynch's hair was styled after. I guess like some kind of classic women's wrestler that I completely missed the reference on. But it was cool. It kind of got messy throughout the match.
Yeah, about to say by the end it was a poof. But also, one of the funner moments, which is Becky grabs a table, sets up the table, no one uses it. Charlotte does a setup in the corner. They go to break it.
Doesn't work.
Only breaks the plastic, and so you literally can hear audible from the crowd as the table refuses to break.
Every time there's a non-table break, I feel like that's way worse than if it actually does break.
Yeah.
It just looks like it smarts.
Alright, so the finish this, to move on, Becky wins, as I said.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. We move on to the next night. Raw, nothing really happened on Raw because Superstar Shakeup, except for two things. One, Sami Zayn returned, which is a wrestler that looks exactly like Josh.
Oh, yeah. I came back.
He came back.
Was I skanking?
You were skanking.
Yes.
And also, you have a new gimmick, which is WWE fans are toxic trash.
That's true, though.
And yeah, that's sort of the thing. That's why I'm so curious of seeing this gimmick. I'm like, ooh, this is a fun one, because that is kind of sort of true, and you're playing with fire now,
I will Sammy. Immediately say, I watched some of Raw and had to stop because then it was my daughter's bedtime, and she will get mad if I watch the rest of it without her. So anyway, they were teasing that they were going to have a title unification match between Seth Rollins and Kofi, to which I was immediately like, no, what are you doing? Don't do that!
Yeah, they had a... They go back, actually, like, it's kind of fun, because this is another throwback to almost the territory days, where territories would do this to get big pops, where it was two territories would come, oh, they're going to have a unification title match, and there was always a run-in, always a double count-out, always something happened.
Dusty finish, baby.
Yeah. And so, the dusty finish this time, and that's what was the bar coming down and interrupting the match.
The bar.
They're not above the bar, they are the bar. But... that's what I was sort of saying about, like, is Seth a face or a heel? Is he... Kofi comes out and challenges Seth to the unification match.
I'm just like...
And later in the night...
Don't do that!
Later in the night, Seth comes out and is just like, yo, SmackDown sucks. Raw's better. And you're like, are you a face or a heel, Seth? Yeah. Because you came out and said, I don't deserve it. We, the universe, WWE Universe, deserve it. Lars Sullivan also came out.
Is this, what was his indie name? It was something German, and it was just one name, and for that reason I've completely forgotten it. Hang on.
Lars Sullivan was meant to premiere earlier in the year. It's been unconfirmed reports that mental health got in the way of him being able to come out.
Interesting.
And
I hope he's doing okay.
Yeah. So he comes out, as he said, Kurt got one last slam down on Baron Corbin. Lars Sullivan comes out, puts Kurt down. I think literally the only other thing that happened was there's been a wrestler by the name of Lacey Evans for, like, the past 2 months that what she does is...
Walk out.
Yeah, her music hits, she walks out, smiles, waves, and leaves. And she's done that for, like, 2 months now. And she finally did something, which she attacked Becky Lynch. And those are literally kind of sort of the only two things that happened. We moved to SmackDown... kind of literally the exact same pattern, except for one other thing that happened, which is it's a day after drop, but I think a lot of people are a bit more okay with it than normal. The Hardy Boys beat the Usos to get the SmackDown titles.
Yes, Matt having bathed in the Lake of Reincarnation to return as his 2000 self.
Yes.
He seems to have somehow de-aged and gotten in significantly better shape, and I am baffled.
Very. He retired, quote-unquote, earlier in the year. Like, he said, I'm done, and then came out and said, like, no, I never said I was done. I was just
kidding.
Just kidding. I was just resting and showed back up. We will probably do a poll podcast on the Hardys eventually.
We should. This show has gone really long.
Yeah, I was about to say, this show went a bit longer than we want.
We can't even get into the other thing, but we can record some of it anyway.
Yeah. But, do you have any closing thoughts on Mania, Raw and SmackDown decisions, choices?
I was overall pleased with the end results of everything. It's always super cool to see that version of John Cena again. Glad that the champion shook out the way that they did, largely to get the belt off of Lesnar, because he bores me. And, it was a decent show, even if I only watched 2 hours of it and was still really exhausted. They really need to stretch this out over 2 days if they're going to go that long.
Yeah.
Would anybody be upset by that? No. Make a whole event out of it.
They do with NXT, which is on Friday this year because of... I guess.
I only watched the Ricochet and Aleister Black match of that, and it was good. And
yeah.
Then I fell asleep because I had to be up at 5 the next morning.
But, you know, as I said, it was a good show. It's a very old-school tradition with WWE, which is... WrestleMania is the one for the fans. It's the one where the faces...
Usually
win, where the heels...
Except in 2000.
Yeah.
Shit got fucked.
They did, and then, like, the past 3 or 4 years, you have been sent home with disappointing, endings that people, no one really liked. And so this is part of the WrestleMania where they said, enough is enough.
Yeah.
Fine, we'll give everyone what they want, you know.
It's a positive move.
I honestly expected Becky to lose because there's no way. They have to have one heartbreak moment.
I knew that she would come out on top.
A lot of people did. Like I said, I was probably the only person that ever said the words, Becky will probably lose at WrestleMania.
I did worry for a minute, but yeah.
Yeah.
Just because we've been conditioned to expect that disappointment.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is overall a positive show. Again, way too long. Please do something about that if you're listening. And if you are listening, I'm not expecting you to be here. Hi. Yeah, cool. I'm going to start the outro music now so we can move on.
Yes.